Poderosas FC Radio. I'm your host, Maite, and I have a couple of very special guests here today, but we're going to get to that in just a moment after I do our Poderosas announcements, which is our events and community highlights. First up is our annual Pride Razor has begun. This is a collaboration with other supporters groups for ACFC, where you basically set a dollar amount that you donate for every single goal that ACFC scores in the month of June. And the money this time is going to be benefiting the Trans Latino, Trans Latine Coalition. The description has the link for that, and it's also on our Instagram page. Next up, we're also supporting Paloma, who's a good friend from supporter group Pestis Mosaic 1781, who's helping raise money for Sarah and her family in Gaza. So if you'd want to support them, please do. We love Paloma and we love Mosaic. We also have a watch party this Saturday, June 15th. It's going to be ACFC versus Houston Dash at 6:30. But if you get there early, which is at the House of Football at the York in Highland Park, the LAFC game is also playing. So you can, two birds. And lastly, we have a new merch drop with our latest Poderosas merch, Pride Month edition. Our proceeds are benefiting Rainbow Labs, an amazing organization that we're going to be learning about today. So show up to our Pride game tailgate on the 30th of June to pick up the shirt that you've already ordered or to purchase a new shirt. And that's pretty much it for announcements. So I can finally get to our guest today, which is Jack Helton, the volunteer manager at Rainbow Labs, and Adri De Luna, the program coordinator at Rainbow Labs. So thank you so much for coming out here to Espacio 1839 to record with me today.
Thanks for having us.
Woo, hello.
If you guys don't mind, please, introduce yourselves. Whoever wants to go first is fine. And just tell us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, your pronouns, the works, just whatever you want to tell us.
You go first.
Hi, I'm Jack Helton. I use they, them pronouns. And I have lived in Los Angeles for about 3 years. I was born and raised in the South in Tennessee, moved here from New York, lived in New York for about 12 years. I was telling Adri the other day that my OG in-game crush, as we were bonding together over this, is on the soccer jock girl growing up.
That forgot was about that.
That was the template. That was
like just a local,
that was the beginning.
A local soccer gal.
Exactly.
Nice.
Of my queerness. Volunteer manager at Rainbow Labs. Work with our awesome community of LGBTQ+ volunteers who are from all over LA County.
That's amazing. And what about you, Adri?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Adri De Luna. I was born and raised in Santa Monica, and then I moved up to San Francisco, so I was hanging out there for a little bit, and then I moved to Pennsylvania, was hanging out, living there for like about a year, and now I'm back in LA. I think I've been back for maybe like three years. I played softball my whole life, so that is a very fun fact about me. And I work for Rainbow Labs, and I specifically work in our sports programs, which I'll talk a little bit about later.
Yes, please do. Well, let's get into first Rainbow Labs, because of course that's kind of the big thing that we're talking about today. Tell me all about it. I know what I know from looking at the website, but I want to hear it from the both of you.
Rainbow Labs is a nonprofit organization based in Los Angeles that serves queer and trans and gender nonconforming youth, specifically in South and East LA, providing accessible mentorship and programming to young people at their school sites, at partner community sites that we have. And we run programs all year round. We're about to kick off our summer mentorship program called One Bold Summer, where mentors within the LGBTQ+ community from across LA are coming to hang out with what is currently 28 young people who have signed up for One Bold Summer to take on a bunch of different experiences and undertake a storytelling curriculum where young people will learn to craft and tell their own stories about their lives. But yeah, Adri can talk a little bit about sports, and also has been at Rainbow Labs much longer than I have. I only joined the team in October.
Okay, it's fairly new, but yeah. You know what? still killing it because you made it here. So
totally.
It'll be 2 years in November since I've been with Rainbow Labs. And so the organization was founded by Jacob Toops and Luis Vasquez back in 2020 at the beginning of the pandemic. It was 100% virtual via Zoom. And then we switched over to like a hybrid model when I started working here. We did storytelling in person and then youth councils hybrid. And One Bolt Summer is also a hybrid program, which we're kind of gearing more towards in-person this summer. We also have a sports lab clinic that we host. We host 4 sports lab clinics, 2 in the fall, 2 in the spring. Our wonderful Daniel facilitates one of the stations there. Mm-hmm. He does Generation Pound with the kids. It's super fun. Shout out to Daniel. We also do like football. We do soccer. We do Move 360, which is like a kind of a game that has been made up like within the community. So we basically go to different middle schools and provide outreach, and we don't ever ask any kids to self-disclose, but we basically go in with queer adults in the community and just have fun and really try to encourage allyship and creating safer spaces for LGBTQ plus youth, specifically our trans and gender non-conforming youth. Oftentimes they don't feel like they have a place in sports or in sporting environments in the sporting community, so we really want to change that and create a safer space. So really, like, we have these huge underlying tones of like, if you just respect, like, let's just respect everyone and let's, you know, be nice to everyone. Good sportsmanship starts with me or starts with you. Those are really some core values that we like to instill in our middle schoolers to hopefully create a more accepting environment, specifically in East and South LA. So yeah, that's a little bit about Sports Lab. I also run a gender expansive softball team in the summertime, and that's really fun. Our practices are starting again soon. The youth will be tailgating at the party or at the Pride game.
Super cool.
Yeah. So the youth will be tailgating at the Pride game, and we're super excited. We're gonna make like I'm gonna buy a bunch of like bows and like a bunch of ribbon and stuff. So we'll have like a bow making workshop there. This program has grown really quickly. The first time we did it, Rainbow Labs did it, we couldn't really, outreach was kind of hard, so we couldn't really get any students. And then the second year, last year, we ended up with a full team and we were able to play games, which was the goal. It was really huge. It was a lot of fun. We went to a Dodger game. We went to the pier. We went to the Pacific Park. And then now this year, it'll be the third year that Rainbow Labs is doing it. And our slots are almost filled. So if you know anyone 14, 18 that's interested in playing softball, they should definitely come play, regardless of gender identity, regardless of sexual identity too. Everyone is allowed to play on this team. So we're really excited. We've built it up kind of from the ground up, and really excited for the season to start.
You've built it up from the ground up.
Thank you. Credit where credit is due. Yes, Jack coming through with the flowers.
Thank you.
I also want to come through with the flowers because this whole time I'm sitting here thinking like, wow, we've come really far. Like, thinking back like my time in high school, which I won't say how long ago that was, but
same.
Yeah, those feelings. It's unfortunate that they haven't gone away when it comes to like, you know, the youth and everybody, but they have a support system now, even though it's not everywhere, but Rainbow Labs exists. That's incredible. So congratulations to both of you. Congratulations to Rainbow Labs. That's incredible. It's really, really incredible.
Yeah, there are, and even within the landscape of like LGBTQ plus youth development, even in the subset of sports, there still remains like very little nationally in terms of focus on trans and gender nonconforming youth, which of course are, those are the populations that are being most highly targeted in sports, in sports participation. And so I know Adri has been really dedicated to always saying like trans and gender nonconforming youth when we're in spaces with other folks who are invested in LGBTQ plus youth, but that T can kind of fall off. And just really making very clear the commitment to gender expansion and to all gender identities being safe and supported and celebrated in sports.
Yeah, we'll get into it now. But I have all these mental notes, but I think there really needs to be a call to action when it comes to any queer athletes, whether you're still playing or whether you've played in the past. I think that it's almost our duty to equip ourselves with the knowledge and the verbiage to be able to support and defend trans athletes, specifically trans women. It's just astounding. Let's go back to youth, like draw back a little bit. 1.4% of youth identify as transgender. And that's the people that they've actually, you know, like researched, like the pods that they've researched in. Within that, 14 to 15% of trans youth actually participate in sports. I haven't been able to find any data on whether or not it's been broken down by like socioeconomic levels, by race and ethnicity. So that data, and where we have no idea if these kids are even playing sports. And it's like, I understand why they're not playing. It makes sense. I think that right now we're making a very simple, like we are making something that is so simple very extremely complicated. And it's up to us and it's up to our community members to really take the time to realize what's going on and realize the violence that's being inflicted on people within our community, on trans people, and really take the time to advocate and like use their voice and say something.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, you're allowed to. You can do a little. Let's do it. Yeah. Well, that's incredible. Speaking of like sports and things, how did Rainbow Labs end up getting involved in this world? You know, because we're here, Poderosa as supporters group. How did Rainbow Labs get involved with ACFC or Poderosas or both?
That's you.
Oh my gosh. We have like I think just we talk about the queer web all the time and how small it is, but like just like the web in general is just tiny. We have a lot of friends that we work with professionally, and you know, we have a lot of friends and loved ones that support Poderosas and that are in Poderosas. So I think it was kind of like a no-brainer to do a collab because we're already working together, whether it's in like high schools, whether it's you know, having them come in and facilitate in middle schools. We have really we have been working together for maybe a year, year and a half now. So I'm really excited to keep this connection going and make it deeper. But yeah, I think that Poderosas is amazing and awesome. So many people that serve the community are involved. So it was really easy to like enter, kind of like to be a part of that same web. And especially since we go out and really try to like work with our community members and our youth and, you know, the schools, admin, all that stuff, which makes up a lot of Poderosas. So yeah, I think that's kind of how we came to be and connected and started collaborating.
Yeah, and our co-founders both bring with them like background and investment in youth sports in particular. And so it feels like a really, not easy, but like an important connection point to, if you care about youth development, you care about queer kids, certainly if you care about trans kids, like to invest in how we can create safe spaces in sports. And in a self-serving way, we've got a lot of self-identified athletes on the team who for whom sports has been an important part of our queerness and our own gender and sexual identities. And so they are spaces that I know I feel really safe in. Angel City has always felt like a space that I felt very safe in as a trans person, and feel able to bring like a lot of parts of myself too, and certainly a way that we want our kids to feel as well.
Wow, that's amazing. I love hearing these kinds of connections because you're right. Yeah, Poderosas is made up of a lot of very community oriented. We are like, that's Poderosas, just community, like, and building that. And I'm not sure if we're like, you guys want to talk about this or not, but from what I'm hearing, Luis from Rainbow Labs was at the first ever LA County LGBTQ Commission meeting today.
Yeah, this morning.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, that's, you know, the history, really.
Yeah.
And one of our, a couple of our, I think, Poderosas members were in attendance, which is how I found out about it. I got the tea.
I was like, that was an impressive turnaround on your part.
Yeah, that was an impressive turnaround.
It's just, you know, me checking the Slack.
Okay, researcher.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's amazing. If I don't know if you want to add anything to that, but just wanted to bring it up since it happened today.
Yeah, no, he Luis is out and about all the time in terms of visibility. Yeah, for sure, to have that presence in local government. And I know that we've had support from Holly Mitchell for like our Kids and Youth Council, which is our only one-on-one mentorship program that we offer at Rainbow Labs. And I think it means something to kids too, to see that sort of endorsement from elected officials. Obviously that's not the whole picture of what it means to be respected as a queer person. And yeah, so it means something, you know, to see Luis and that role. And I think probably means a lot to young people that I know that he has mentored, and who seeing a gay Latino man has been like a very important part of their own development. And so seeing him in this sort of role is important for sure.
It's amazing. I hope that he listens to this and hears your kind words, because that's
hi, Luis.
Good praise.
Both of us, I think, could really go off for a long time about trans kids in sports.
Yes, definitely. Something we're very passionate.
Super fair. Yeah. I mean, we have the time. This is the moment, like where I want y'all to be able to just like put it out in the world. Like this is what we stand for. This is gonna be living on the internet for a while. So, whatever y'all want to talk about, I don't have a lot more after that. I'm gonna start getting into soccer, and it's like,
oh yeah, okay,
cool,
yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, anything else that y'all want to share? Stories or just general?
Yeah, no, just like I would say, the summary of the soapbox is like women's sports has been such a proving ground for me, and for a lot of the lesbians and dykes and queer folks that I know, for them to feel safe. And there's another step to be taken for trans folks and trans young people in particular. And we're seeing like isolated incidences of, I suppose not incidences, like moments of celebration and inclusion for trans folks. And women's sports is certainly leading the way for that inclusion. But yeah, my encouragement would be for folks to think about how good these sorts of spaces make them feel, and think about who's still not included in those spaces, and how that can really be a call to action of all the best parts of an organization like ACFC to cast the net even wider to all young folks.
Yeah, and I mean, for a little bit of context, in the NWSL, there's one openly non-binary player, Quinn, on Seattle Reign. And of course, like I said, openly.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know, and still with that one player, we're kind of leading the way.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, interesting. But yeah, absolutely. I love that. I love that you're mentioning all of that. Yeah, anything you can think of, AG?
Yeah. I just think that, I don't know if I've said this already or not, but like, I think a big thing is when we are talking about gender equity and like equity in women's sports, trans women have to be included in that, because you know, when we're talking about all women here, and oftentimes they are forgotten about, or people just, if it's brought to people's attention, they have inappropriate questions or just like don't really know how to address it. So that's something that I think Jack and I, and like when I have gone into spaces and in youth development spaces where we're talking about this and inclusion, you know, gender inclusion and equity in sports, people oftentimes have these, you know, really out of pocket, inappropriate questions that they want to ask. So like a few ways that I try to navigate those questions and really try to answer them as gracefully as possible without getting super upset with someone is like, well, first of all, having a community and having my friends to support me, because I also understand that I don't have all the answers. So I want to shout out my friend Bo and my friend Emily, because I've texted them like the day before going to like a round table. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to talk about equity and inclusion in sports for like trans youth. Can like you help me? What if someone asks this question or what if someone asks that question? So having a community, I know that we work very closely. Jack and I work very closely to create, you know, like a try to foster trainings and try to foster more conversations around this topic. And Luis and Jacob are really forward facing and really like make an effort to create inclusive space and an inclusive environment for trans youth in sports, especially through our sports lab clinics. But I think that it's really, so yeah, it's huge to have a community, and it's really important to like really just like if there's very simple answers to questions that people try to make complicated.
The whataboutisms of trans inclusion in sports, the whole biological advantage thing that's the silliest thing in the world. All that, athletes that have a biological advantage. Yes. That's what being an athlete is.
You mentioned your friends being a resource for you, but do you know of just like a general resource for people so that they don't ask the dumb questions? Of course, like Rainbow Lamps.
And this is something that we're actively, as Adrienne was just starting to mention, like, actively developing as our external training pathway for folks who want to, you know, like local sports organizations or teams who want to do this work but don't quite know how to do it or what the language is or what the framework is. Please reach out to us, because obviously you've got sitting here two people who are incredibly impassioned about making room, loving, caring room for trans and gender nonconforming youth and all athletes and sports, and would love to partner with folks, especially obviously LA-based people who are eager to do this work. There are so few organizations doing it, and we'd love to be in the room for that.
Curious, like in a general, like a not an organization, but like a singular person looking for that information, would they still reach out to you? Is that like still a thing?
Yeah, I mean, we're such a small team that
it's like a lot to ask. I feel like
It is, but it's also something that it matters so much to us that I would rather them reach out to us, and I feel like people are more likely to reach out to like an individual at an organization that is in their city, rather than like they can technically call the Trevor Project hotline even if they're not in crisis, and they can ask for resources, and they can and should do that if folks feel more comfortable with that pathway, because giant organizations like the Trevor Project and like the Human Rights Campaign and GLSEN all have lots of resources to answer this question. But it can be a little overwhelming, and so I would, even though that's not like officially on our banner of services, I would definitely make that invitation for people to reach out to us if they have questions.
Yeah. And I would also like to emphasize, while it is an invitation, we do have boundaries.
And, absolutely.
Definitely. Like, I always go into a space whenever, you know, questions pop up about gender equity and inclusion in sports. We're going to have this conversation and root it in respect and root it with love, or else I'm not going to have this conversation with anyone, regardless of whether we're at a training or we're just talking, you know, one-on-one. It's really important to set those boundaries. But yeah, we are more than happy to have conversations with folks. And we're hoping to really expand as an organization. We like to call ourselves like professional queers and professional gays. Like, we're getting paid to be gay, working for a gay org, or a queer org. So yeah, we're hoping to expand more on trainings and providing resources for people, because it's not something that's talked about often, and we should be talking about it. And I, you know, it's one thing to not, I understand that people have never been,
they don't have super like tons of access to the information.
Yes, access is a big thing. If we can provide more access, I think we'd be, you know, that'd be good.
And we always say that we would rather folks ask us than ask the kids, you know, that exposing young people to language that could be potentially really harmful or really at a formative time in their life. We're all people who have been out and about and weathered a lot to get to where we are, so we're the people to ask those sorts of questions of, and then you know, troubleshoot if there's boundaries that need to be negotiated or norms that need to be set. Those are teachable moments for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually really love that because I remember a few years back there being a lot of talk about how much emotional labor queer people do, people of color do when it comes to these sensitive subjects. Trans people also have to do this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's kind of like, pay me for my emotional labor.
Yeah,
and
that's sort of,
that's,
you know, Rainbow Labs is the ones to pay. So go for it.
Yeah,
I love that so much. Well, we have a little bit of time to yap about football or soccer. So I'd love to hear about your maybe a favorite player on ACFC or just in general your stories when it comes to, I know you played softball and not so much soccer, but
story.
However, you know, I'd love to hear about your personal soccer stories.
This is a soccer story. I grew up playing soccer from like the time that I could walk.
What position?
I played all over, but I mostly played defense. That's where I landed as in like high school time. But I, when I was still in the closet, I was teaching in public schools in Tennessee. And the women's national team came through Chattanooga, Tennessee, which is is a major happening for Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Super side note, one of my best friends lives in Chattanooga.
What?
Yeah. He used to live here. He moved there.
Okay. Moved there. So I probably won't.
But yeah, anyways, go on. Okay. Hi. I was so excited to hear that. Yeah. Drew Hine.
But they came through town and they were playing at like an odd time. I didn't get out of school until 4:00 and I think the game started like at 4:00 and I took PTO hours to take like a half day and leave so I could get there in time for the bus to get there. Like I wanted to be early to be there because I wanted to see Megan Rapinoe in the flesh, Abby Wambach in the flesh, because I was just such a huge ally. And I just loved women's sports.
What is that one quote from Orphan Black? A lesbian supporter.
Yeah, I was such a lesbian supporter. Such a supporter of lesbian athletes in particular, lesbian soccer players in particular. And I came back into the classroom and I'd gotten merched out and like put a picture up of the women's national team on my dry erase board, and I don't know why it was such a mystery to me later when I was when the kids figured out that I was gay.
You're like, how
did they know? I just love women's sports so much. So yeah, it's a pretty formative piece of my coming out. It wasn't much longer before I was out after that women's national team came through.
That's adorable.
Thanks.
Do you have a soccer story?
Oh my gosh, I do. I was telling Jack in the office, I retired from soccer early at like 11 because it's very intense, and I got hit in the face by a ball and she kicked it so hard and she was so close to me, and then to like make matters even worse, I had a crush on her. So
that would ruin me.
Sorry, I gotta quit the game.
Yeah, so I hung that jersey up and I never looked back.
An honorable retirement.
Yep. So that is my soccer story. Also, oh my gosh, I have another one. When I was 8 years old, I played soccer for the first time, and I was playing defense, and there was like a little dog pile that happened, so we all kind of fell on each other, and my foot like went back, and then I kicked the ball into the goal, but it was my goal, so I... like, it didn't look like I did it because we were all kind of just like, you know, when kids fall on each other, like, mm-hmm. it's like a zombie apocalypse type thing where like everyone's just falling. So I like, no one knew that I hit the goal, but it still like made it. And so we lost 1-0.
Oh no.
I was in the car with my mom and I was like, remember that goal that got scored when we all fell? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, I scored it. She like, was so disappointed in me, and I was like, I can't handle this. Oh, it was just too much pressure. So I hope
that's
that
a lot
was
trauma around soccer. Yeah, youth soccer for you.
Yeah, so that's why I was like softball all the way.
I'm hoping that ACFC heals some of that for you. I also have extremely high emotions around this team. It will break my day. and I make fun of myself every single week when they don't win. But yeah, it's a lot. It's too much investment.
I would love to watch a game with you.
I'll send some memes that I've made.
That's tragic.
Every
That's
week.
Gay
every
camp.
Single week. but I'll see you guys at the game. well, let's just end it off on a positive note. Who's a player that y'all love, that you want to give a shout out to? Our segment is officially called Player of the Pod.
Of the Pod. I'm going to give Didi Haricic some love. I don't think keepers get enough love. So that's what I'm going to elect.
And she's had such a good game. She's had some incredible saves. She's really stepped up.
Just watching keepers, I can't imagine what they have to go through. I mean, certainly in like PK moments, but I just feel like you gotta pour it out for the keeper.
What about you, Adri?
I'm gonna give a shout out to Giselle Thompson. Shout out to you, girl, because if you're listening to this, I hope you are. I just think that it's awesome. I am really close with my younger sister, so awesome seeing that duo and two sisters playing. I think
so
that
rad.
Yeah, it's really cool, and I think that it's like a huge kind of like an ode to LA. They're born and raised here, and to just bring them up and bring them into, you know, the community, it's really, it feels really nice to see.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Agreed. We used to have what I referred to as the baby, that was Alyssa, and now we have baby Thompson, which is Giselle. It gets very confusing, but I love both of these players. They're incredible. So
I'm going to have like a hidden 10-year-old baby sister that like jumps on the field next season.
I know, for real. Do they have any other siblings?
I think they do, but significantly younger. I could be wrong, honestly.
You're like, that one was in training camp. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. I'm happy with what we've got, the both of them. I'm happy to see them develop and stuff. Yeah. So super stoked on that. Great picks. I love that. All right, we're going to take a quick break to talk to Casey, also known as Casey's on the Case, and we're going to really get into diagnosing what's going on with ACFC and maybe even getting a little bit into NWSL. So enjoy that. Welcome, Casey, also known as Casey's on the Case. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
So good. Really glad to have you on here, longtime viewer. please let us know a little bit about yourself so that the people know.
Sure. So Casey's on the Case, I guess, is how most people know me. I think I get greeted that way more now than my like full name. but I, you know, mainly do soccer content on TikTok. But started like consistently about a year ago, and thankfully have, you know, formed a nice little community over there. Full-time lawyer, and then by early morning content creator usually, and spend most of my free time watching sports, especially soccer. So that's kind of the gig, and just tactics nerd and a lot of hot takes most of the time.
Yeah, the hot takes are definitely the reason that I'm so excited to have you on here, because I watch your TikToks, and I don't know how it happened. The algorithm helped me out there. But I think you have really good insights. So I'm really excited to talk about ACFC today. If you want, let's get into it. Let's talk about these past couple of games and our performance specifically. I know you weren't at the San Diego home game, but I was, and the energy was interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting from my couch as well. The energy in my own household was interesting. And obviously, like, Thursday night before a holiday weekend, like, that's going to be rough in LA just to begin with. But it was just, like, it was just a rough go. It was just a bad game. And it was, you know, I don't even know what's going on with San Diego there either, because, like, they should have won that handedly. And it was just, nothing was clicking, really. So you know, not the game we would want for a rivalry game. You want something that's a little bit more energetic, something with just, even if you lose, like something with a little more fire behind it. And it just wasn't there. So it was, you know, kind of just a letdown from that sense for a rivalry game, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. We're really used to, when it comes to the San Diego and
ACFC, it being a really high level of entertainment, but it was very frustrating. I felt myself very, very frustrated. I mean, like you said, San Diego has Sanchez now. We have Messiah Bright, who was completely absent this game. She usually at least subs in. She didn't even show up for a minute. So it was interesting. And then after that, we had ACFC versus Gotham, which these are, you know, the reigning champs. And I thought maybe we'd have a little bit of an advantage with so many of their players being gone on international duty. And I was wrong. I was very wrong.
You know, and there were some bright moments there, right? There were some good chances. You know, their keeper obviously had to make quite a few good saves, but ultimately it was still some of the same problem we've been having, which is what is going on with this attack. And really that stems to me from the midfield, because I just don't see where we're generating it. You know, it's just been a hard watch lately. Like, I hate saying that about a team that I love so much and want to support. And it's rough when it's your own team. But, like, if I were a neutral right now, I would not be watching us. That's just what it is. It's nothing seems to be moving in a direction that's making me optimistic. Every player has, like, little flashes of things that are working for them and little moments that give you hope, but nothing cohesive.
Yeah, and I don't know how you feel about this, but our most consistent roster has been, like, the front line. LaRue, Alyssa, and, oh my gosh, I'm blanking. And Emsley. These are, brilliant players. I think we have a lot of really brilliant players. Like you said, we're only seeing glimpses right now. But overall, if you put these teams on, like, other rosters, these players on other rosters, I think they would be phenomenal. So something I think at the core is sort of messed up, and something that you said in one of your videos really interested me in, which is one of the biggest reasons that I brought you on here, is to talk about what is going on at the core of ACFC. How do we fix this?
I think at this point you gotta pull the formation. I think you cannot play a 4-3-3 anymore. I'd like to see us experiment with something different. This is just not working, whatever's happening here. And it really, you know, we can go all the way back to before the season started. And Junendo's injury for me, I think, is one of the biggest things that kind of sets off the chain of events that causes the problems. But she's such an important player, and this is going to be true, I think, for Japan as well at the Olympics. She's such an important player, and to not have her and her creativity and the way that she can unlock other people, especially in the transition, really hurts us. There was no good plan for that, which, you know, it happens, right? She gets injured. But then you start seeing these other moves that happen at the end of the transfer window, and their moves were, in theory, I could see why they make sense, but in practice, what was the plan? You know, Paige Nielsen leaving, I guess we have to make space. We had an offer and you thought it'd be fine, but now with Sarah Gordon injured, clearly that wasn't fine. That's been really challenging. Like, Megan Reed has done well. I think Madison Curry playing a new position has done quite well. I mean, she's been a revelation. She's been the brightest spot of this whole season for me, is how well she's done. And then Amandine Henri, like, would she be fixing our midfield right now? I don't think so. I think she's luggage, frankly. I'm sorry, I'm going to get a reputation as Amandine Henri's biggest hater, but that whole deal was luggage. So offloading it in any way was a good move, even if it meant that we were going to be worse in the short term as a team, just because it was that bad of a deal. So I'm fine with all that. But then I'm sitting here and I'm like, we have nothing going now. So the defense was the only thing we felt good about. We should have been moving on to solidifying the midfield. We can't seem to find any rhythm in the midfield. So why not do something that allows more of these attackers to get on the pitch and play a 4-4-2? You could drop Thompson out wide. You drop Emsley out wide in the midfield. Only leave on two central midfielders. And then put LaRue and Messiah Bright up top. Put Casey Fair up top. Just do something that would give us something different. Because I don't see a combination in the midfield right now that's doing anything.
That's a great point. Because when you think about this last Gotham game, the only time that we felt like secure or safe was when we were doing really well in the attack, which was at the beginning of the game. And like, once it became a defensive game for us, it fell apart. So yeah, if we have enough attackers that we can just continually push, then that is our best defense, especially without Gordon. Without Gordon, there's truly a hole in our back line. As good as all these players are, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's you can't replace her. You just can't. And hopefully she's back soon. But, you know, it's hard to like begrudge that particular problem, because like if she's gone, I mean, I don't care who else you had. You were going to have an issue. She's just too good. I mean, really, I'd try new formation for now, and then I would go and try to find an attacking midfielder, ideally. I think we need to go try to pick one up. I don't know who that is, because I think almost everybody who I really like in that position has a pretty good home. But I would like to see us find somebody who can actually generate that if we're going to be this committed to the 4-3-3, and I don't know that we need to be.
Yeah, I agree. One of the reasons that I was excited about Rocky joining the team was because I know that she can score goals, but she's become, obviously right now, her time is very occupied by the defense. She has to be a defensive midfielder, but I can see her being such a good attacking midfielder. I wish she had that opportunity. Maybe we can lean into that at some point. Like you said, our backline just can't afford it right now. What about behind the scenes, even further back, you know, like, We've changed out coaches. But that's pretty much. I mean, we've added some staff. We've definitely made some changes. Is it just like that? We're still getting used to it. We have so much new staff this year, or is it like, is it time to hang it up? I don't know.
I'm so torn on this. I don't know what happened to the team that played for Becky Tweed before. You know, I was like everybody else, I think, yelling like, make her permanent. She doesn't need to be interim. Like, she should be able to stay. She's done a great job. Give her the job, reward her for her success. And I was thrilled when she got the opportunity. And thus far, it's just been a cluster. Like, I have not, I don't, and it's so rough that I don't even fully know how to fix it and how to completely diagnose it. Because you're right. If we go back to, you know, what you're saying with Rocky, like, Rocky is a great 10, but she has no ability to play that right now because of the way that the midfield is getting kind of pinned back. And is that really a function of the defense? Probably. But I think it's like, she's, something went from when it was interim, it was like, I think her mindset was a little more, we're just trying to survive. We're going day to day here. And sometimes that one foot in front of the other mindset is really useful. And now she's the coach and it's like, I want to impart this vision. I want to have a game plan. I want to have a signature style. And sometimes having a signature style is really overrated. Sometimes the method is one foot in front of the other and just scrap them out. So maybe she's just not a coach that's meant to have a signature style. And I personally think that's okay. There's a lot of people who really don't, though. So I don't know for like career longevity if that's the best move. But, you know, there's something to be said for just being a coach who knows how to get wins. And I think she was that last season and she's not right now.
Yeah, I can 100% see that. Like, it's kind of breaking the glass ceiling for me a little bit, because you're right. And she has a different approach now. She's trying to build something bigger, and we just need to win. And, you know, this identity thing, this like signature style, that could come with time. That could come with having a player stay with us for a long period of time. We have so much youth that should be possible. So yeah, I'm hoping that our focus goes back to just winning, because the morale is getting a little rough out here. But let's talk about other teams for a little bit and how they're doing, because there's a lot of really exciting things happening. The NWSL is going to NWSL, as they say. And a lot of teams that were at the bottom last year at their top this year, KC and Orlando in particular, dominating this league. How are you feeling about, I mean, they recruited like absolute geniuses.
Yeah, I mean, Orlando, everybody was talking about Gotham. And for me, it was, you know, Gotham was flashy, but Orlando, I'm watching and I'm like, nobody want to talk about them over there and what they're building, because that's insane. I'm excited for a franchise, frankly, that has not had a lot of success and has a very devoted fan base. So I'm thrilled to see that for them. And then Kansas City, it's kind of the reverse, because I wasn't looking at Kansas City this season thinking that they were going to come and be this powerhouse. Obviously showing when they got her, it was like, okay, that's a pretty good signing, but
good job.
You know, they were really the team everybody talked about last season. With 2023, that was really, we all thought they were going to just come and run over everybody, and it didn't happen at all. So it's been interesting seeing that. I'm jealous, and I'm watching San Diego you know, pick up Kansas City's GM, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, she doesn't care about consent for trading players, but she does seem to find the buys, and I would like to win. So were we in that conversation, or are we just that committed to Angela Hughley's, who, you know, I don't think has a ton of experience at this, if we're being honest.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I was thinking too, like maybe the GM is the next move, not to like point fingers, but I am super jelly of what Casey has done, because I think that a lot of what they did in the preseason for 2023 has now paid off in 2024. And, you know, I'd like a payoff. So I can't say that I fear San Diego that much, because they already spent money. You know what I mean? They got Maria Sanchez. She's not like she's a costly player. And they are also kind of squandering it, you know, the way that we are. So I'm super curious how that goes. I'm excited for Washington. Washington has some players that are incredible, like younger, a rookie that is absolutely destroying everyone. And Rodman, who everybody loves, who's not even scoring, but somehow still the best player on the field. Yeah, it's great. It's really, really cool. So it's been a fun season for everyone but ACFC.
Yeah, we're literally, like, I think the only people having a worse time than us are the poor Utah fans. And they at least get to say, you know, or at least I keep telling them, it's your first season. Like, just calm yourselves. Like, it's okay to have a bad first season. You could be us in your third season and having it just kind of, you know, evaporate away from you there. So it's been fun and you know, lots of surprises. I'm really curious what's going to happen with Washington Spirit when they do get their permanent coach. And if they do make some more, they have room to move. That's kind of the wild part, is they still have space to really play in the, you know, next window, which a lot of other teams don't. So I'm curious to see what kind of moves they make.
For sure.
We can talk about next game. We can talk about Kristen Press, I guess, because we haven't really talked about that.
You're so right.
If you want to talk about it, because people want to talk about it. And I'm, you know, I am so nervous. And I'm so cautious. I'm like, I haven't done a video on it yet. I'm like, see, she returned to training, and I'm like, I see it, but like, I'm not saying anything until I've seen her play a full 90, and even then, like, a full 90 a couple times. So
she's being so cautious with us. I think she's being very much like, there's so much to go, I'm just doing stuff that I've already been doing. Like, she's leveling our expectations so hard, because she knows that we are like seeking a savior right now. But it's still really nice to see her on the field. I think, like, after seeing Macario come back after a really long injury, and a lot of people are coming back from injury. So I'm like, okay, come on, Press. You got this. And her dropping the news that Tobin Heath is not retired was fun.
I'm sorry. What do you mean? What's she doing? Where's she traded? I'm sorry. I don't buy that show for a minute. I got two theories on that. One, Tobin is still seeing a therapist, processing if she's retiring. And two, they want to sell re-ink memberships. I don't begrudge them, either of them, because, like, that's, people are curious. But, like, where is Tobin training? Where is that been happening? Somebody would have seen her at some point. She's not, like, just, you know, sitting at home for multiple years, like, vaguely injured, maybe, and then secretly, like, going to all these practices and it hasn't gotten out. I just don't see it. But then again, Julie Ertz trained with like an MLS 2 team or whatever, or Next Pro or whatever it was called back then. I think it's still Next Pro. But I mean, she trained with them for a while and nobody heard about that somehow too. So I could be completely wrong, but I don't buy it at this point.
For sure. Yeah. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. But I know that Gordon and Press were on the field together at the same time. And I just hope that puts good energy out. And especially with new games coming up, maybe that helps, like, morale. Maybe Press being on that in that training session and her having so much experience and coming to them being like, hey, do this. I don't know if she gets to have an opinion like that, but I hope something is happening in the trainings to prepare us for our upcoming games, which is next up with a couple of repeats. We have Houston coming up. We're going to go see Paige on her new home field in very hot and humid Houston. And I mean, they've had a little bit of a good run lately. Like, it's not the Houston that we were not scared of who then beat us.
Yeah, no, it's gotten, you know, obviously, like, over the weekend they had a, like, the roughest go of people being gone coming back from the international break. But they are in, just like us, a real point scramble, because if you start looking statistically at where people are in the standings and what you've needed to get into the playoffs, we are like the bottom four teams really are pretty much in a like need to win every match type of situation. And I think those are almost the matches I'm a little bit more scared of right now than some of the ones in the middle, because those teams, like, shoot, looking historically at what you've had to do, I think like Washington Spirit is just not far off at all from clinching a playoff spot already. Like, I think like historically they need like one or two more wins and they're good. So wow. Yeah, that's like, right. I mean, we're not even halfway through the season.
And
so,
in the season where we have the easiest, like, this is going to be the easiest year and maybe the next to ever get into a playoff spot. There's eight positions. Like, how can we not make it?
No, I know. Well, especially because I'm sitting here and I can say, like, I Seattle's not doing well. And, like, I think they're much better than their points show. But, like, they're almost, like, they're falling behind. They're gone. Utah struggling. Houston, you know, has been struggling. But, like, it's just kind of, I don't even know if Fran knows fully what he's doing over there. He's, like, kind of throwing things out and, you know, broken clocks right twice a day. And it seems to be going okay now. But like, with two expansion teams in there too and only four teams not making a playoff, like, we should be making a playoff. This should not be that hard. So we gotta do this. We gotta take care of business. But I think picking up points against Houston would be great. But I'm kind of looking at it and I'm like, is Orlando just gonna be chilling by the time we play them? Like, are we?
I mean, that's kind of true. And you know, another team that is playing a lot better than their points will show is Racing Louisville, who we have coming up for our Juneteenth game. And I, you know, that's a team that I'm actually scared of. I think it's a really good team that, like, keeps messing up, you know, like, that's all that I'm seeing with them. Like, if they have a good game, we're done for a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's also, I think, a very poor matchup for us. Like, I actually don't know of a team that we match up against worse than Racing Louisville, just because their midfield is so strong. And where's ours? Like, I don't know where ours is. So it's they scare me quite a bit just from a matchup perspective. But to your point, there's some kind of like mental strength thing going on there where you're like, why can't you all hold on to any kind of a win? I'm not sure. But I think it's, you know, maybe it's turning around for them. I will be very surprised if they don't end up making the playoffs this year. They just, and actually probably advancing into like the semis or so, because I think they look good. But you know, NWSL is gonna NWSL, as you already said. It's a weird league, which is, you know, 90% of the fun.
Yeah, for sure. They have some scary players. They have DeMello. I think Flint was like playing really well this season. I usually think like, oh, she's gonna get injured any minute now, because she's an injury queen, but she's been holding out. And they have Kanu constantly on the bench, who is a starting player for any other team, I think. So yeah, I'm still scared of Banda. When we face Orlando, I'm still scared of Banda. She is extraordinary, but she didn't play very well against San Diego, so maybe you're right, maybe we'll get lucky. I don't know.
Well, you have to like make a deliberate decision with her that you're not, you got to set that back line back. You got to just accept that you're going to lose the foot race and set back a little bit. And I don't think a lot of teams are keen to do that, because a lot of them don't have that game plan. There's a few too many teams in this league that are very committed to the high press, or not the high press, rather the high line. And I don't understand it. So we'll see what we do with that. But especially if Sarah Gordon's not back, I'm like, set that line back, man. Give yourself some room. Just keep her in front of you, because like, I don't want to see her getting in behind. It's gonna be a bad time.
I mean, Gordon is supposed to be one of like the speediest backline, you know, players. Does a fully healthy Gordon stack up against a Banda? We haven't seen it yet. We got really lucky not to play against Banda first time around, but we have, you know, 3 weeks to get Gordon back on the field, because she's our only savior in this case, I think.
Yeah, but you know, it's almost one of those things where I think sometimes the downside to having somebody really fast in your backline, and you know, to the point where you would even contemplate the foot race, is that you contemplate the foot race. And if you don't have somebody that you know can deal with her, you will adjust and just play it safe. And I think that can be okay too. So I don't know. I obviously want Sarah Gordon there. I just want us to also be realistic about who we are facing. And we've done it before, you know, against other players where there was potentially a speed advantage. We've adjusted and dealt with that challenge tactically, which interestingly, like circling back to what we were talking about with Becky Tweed, it's like she just seems to do better with her back against the wall than she does with like creative thinking, like on her own. You know what I mean? Like her, she just gets creative when she's in a corner. So, because I still think that the second time we played Kansas City obviously didn't end up going our way, but it was until the very end, it was the best I'd seen a team deal with Kansas City at that point. It's the best I've seen us play. So I kind of wonder if you give her a problem to solve instead of making her, you know, write the whole thesis from scratch, maybe she does a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. You're right. Temwa was a menace and then she got to us and I don't think she scored that game. So maybe you're right. I think I'm wrong. But still, we kept her under wraps better than expected.
We exceeded expectations.
That's a good way to put it. Good way to put it. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else we can say about ACFC. It's a struggle right now. Are you going to be attending any of the upcoming games?
So I'm still a little bit up in the air on that. I think, you know, so I live in Oakland and then but I work in LA still and I lived in LA for a very long time. So I'm down in LA about once a week. And so it just kind of depends if it syncs up with my work travel, if I get to go. But I'm hopeful I'll get to go because it's you know, even when we're bad, like I know the vibe isn't the same, but it's still a vibe. So I'm still always happy to be there, which is, it's been great. I think one of the things I love about just going to ACFC games and talking to folks who are like newer into soccer and asking them why they got into it is like, for me, I'm into soccer because I've played it forever. And, you know, I've been my thing I've grown up with, but they're like, no, I'm just committed to this existing. Like I'm committed to women's sports existing. And I'm like, that's just so cool. Like, I love that you're just bought into this. So now I'm like trying to, you know, up in the Bay, we're going to get the Golden State Valkyries. I don't know anything about basketball. And I'm like, let's do it.
I'm down. So, season tickets. Let's go.
Yeah. No, exactly. I'm like, I will be there. I don't know anything. I'm going to just yell and be a fan. And it's going to be great. Even though I know my brain, I'm going to be way too analytical, way too fast. But, you know, anyway, ACFC games inspire me. It's just a cool crowd of really like great people.
It's super cool. And I don't miss a game even when I know we're going to lose. But I'm also going to be, and a lot of us are going to be going to the away Bay game. So I'm excited to see that environment. Seems really fun. It's like, I think they are trying to like emulate a lot of what ACFC is doing. And I'm excited to see what they have achieved.
Yeah, I may be at that one as well. I'm still figuring out. That's also a little up in the air for me. But that's, I like that park. It's a little controversial in my household, PayPal Park. Just every time we've gone there, we've gone for LAFC earthquakes and we're big LAFC fans and it's every single time gone terribly. But I love watching planes land and take off and you can see them right from the stadium.
It's so close. Even if it's like,
yeah, it's like literally the runway is right there. So that's a really fun thing to watch too. If for some reason it's going sideways and you just need a distraction, like we'll bet on how many planes are going to land in the next like 10 minutes or something, you know, just why not?
That's hilarious. I feel like I'm not one that can take my eyes off of the game ever, but that's a pro tip. I'll provide that to the rest of the away game people.
Yeah. Well, hey, if it starts going bad enough, you can take your eyes off, or at least, I mean, like for me, it's like there's two things I will look at and not want to take my eyes off. It's like what's going on the field. And then an airport. Like an airport for me is, it's very difficult not to. I love planes. I just think they're so cool.
I love everything except for being in them. So I feel you. But thank you so much for being on the show and for talking to me about what is going on with this team that we love so much. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Please let us know where we can follow you. I follow you already, but for everyone that's listening, where can we watch your excellent analysis on football?
Yeah, I'm mainly on TikTok at Casey's on the Case. That is my handle on every single platform, but I will say I post mostly on TikTok. I'm doing a little more on YouTube lately, which is great. And then Instagram, I'm trying to put more out over there, but honestly, it still feels like it's like just my like real life friends and it's like a lot of soccer and then I get you know the jitters about it. But you can find me pretty much anywhere at Casey's on the Case.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to Casey's on the case and all her, you know, great analysis. She's brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We're going to end off with Jack and Adri talking about our plugs, and we're going to plug them and some a few other things. Starting off with our first plug, which is always the LA business of the podcast. Of course, it's going to be Rainbow Labs. Please check out their website. Recommend it to your local organizations that need help and getting more informed. And that's pretty much it. Go to the links in our description to find out more and to get like direct access. What is your Instagram ad or your social media ads that you usually use?
Mine is Adri De Luna, so A-D-R-E-E-D-E-L-U-N-A. You can find me on Instagram. If you would like to connect professionally, my email is adeluna@rainbowlabs.org. Yeah, that's how you can find me.
Amazing.
And our organization's Instagram handle @rainbow_labs. My email address for any folks who are listening who are interested in serving as mentors or volunteers with us. We would love to have you. We invite all, certainly members of the LGBTQ plus community, but also our allies to come on out. We have something for everybody, a lot of different commitment levels and time capacity availabilities. So my email address is jhelton, H-E-L-T-O-N, @rainbowlabs.org.
So a book that I would like to recommend that I haven't finished yet is Fair Play, How Sports Shape the Gender Debates by Katie Barnes. I'm in chapter 2 and it's been pretty good so far. Yeah. But yeah, that's one of the books that I recommend, and I'm going to keep thinking about what else I can recommend.
That one's on my list, actually. So that's amazing. Yeah, that's a great one. Anything you got?
Yeah, Jack? I got one. Okay, I'm going to recommend the graphic novel Gender Queer by Maya Kobabe. It's a memoir graphic novel, and I think captures really beautifully what it looks like to grow up wondering and questioning about gender. It's also, it might still be the most highly banned book in the country. So for the overlap that I'm sure is high amongst your listeners, for people who care about book bans and censorship and stuff like that in schools, it's a beautiful graphic novel that, like, the art itself is really visually stunning. But a lot just about the body and about how hard it is to be in a body, which I think, as athletes and like folks invested in sports, we think a lot about. Yeah. So Gender Queer by Maya Kobabe.
Perfect. They're both going on my list.
Awesome.
Adri, you have another one?
Sorry. Oh, awesome. There's also a, Instagram, Sports Beyond the Binary. That's really cool. So definitely check that out. There's also Watch Me Sports Bar in Long Beach. That's about to open up. Well, let me see. I'm looking at their Instagram. Grand opening Friday, 7/26 at 4 p.m. So yeah, everyone should watch women's sports, and you should go to a women's sports bar to go watch women's sports.
And the Olympics is going on when that opening happens. So go watch the women's Olympics games, like, including, you know, soccer. So that's awesome. I'm really excited about that. Truly.
My girlfriend would kill me if I didn't make a plug for women's rugby.
We're getting like a national league?
And there are so many good women's rugby matches that happen at Cal State Dominguez Hills, and the attendance is always very low, but it's like such a vibe and so cool to come out. Tickets are so cheap, and you need to be paying for tickets for women's sports. And I don't know that a lot of people know that we have such high quality women's rugby come through town very often, and like national sevens tournaments and stuff going on here. So yeah, would just encourage folks to, in solidarity amongst women's sports, come out and watch some rugby too.
Also, shout out LA Legends. I don't know if y'all have ever heard. Well, you've heard of LA Legends. Yeah. Have you ever heard of LA Legends?
I don't think I have.
Okay, we have a tackle women's football, like a women's football tackle team.
Oh, yeah, in a Premier League. Yeah.
Yeah, they're dope. So they play in Gardena.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Gardena, we did a collab this year, and we went to go support one of their games at their Pride Night. So definitely check them out. It's really cool. Like, it's really fun to watch their games. Yeah.
That's awesome. I hadn't heard of the football league. I had heard about the rugby news because shout out to my friend JoJo, who's on this podcast, who we were like talking about that. And we're very excited to support.
Yeah. So
great to know. Well, thank y'all so much for being here. We're going to share this episode and share a lot of other things, as always, on @Boletosas_ACFC on our Instagram. Also check our description for all the links on everything we talked about. And once again, just so happy to have learned from both of you today. And thank you for making the drive and coming in person, because it's so much more fun this way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much it. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you.